We're back. I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCUR's Central Standard. And now I'm sitting here with Yael Abuhalka, a fixture for a long time on the Kansas City Star editorial page. He worked for the paper for 37 years before being laid off last September. In those 37 years, he went deep into the politics and culture of Kansas City. And it was such a part of who he was that he kept on doing that on his own blog after his long tenure at the Star came to an end. So it was kind of a surprise when he announced on that same blog that he'd be leaving Kansas City and leaving journalism to join the Peace Corps. Yael Abuhalka, good morning.
Good morning, Gina. Good to be here.
You know, there's a moment at the very end of this blog post announcing your departure where you talk about some of the things you've been following, like
right.
Talking about the mayor and the governor. And then you say, I could go on and on, but the point is, I don't have to.
Yeah.
I felt like I was witnessing some realization that it took you a while to pick up on that.
Yeah.
That you could do anything now.
And that's actually been the best part of this whole thing, basically, because you do realize there's life after work. There's even life outside of work. Maybe there's even a different job for somebody.
Life outside of Kansas City?
And life outside of Kansas City.
I mean,
yeah, I know. For at least, I hope, 27 months. But yeah, and that's one of the things that is pretty interesting when you think about it, that life will go on without you. I mean, City Hall will continue to go, and Chris Kobach will or won't win the governorship or whatever, and other people will write about that. Of course, I still care probably tremendously about it, but over 44 years of journalism, I did a lot of that. And you do realize, oh, maybe there's something else to do. And in this case, I get to do it with my wife, and that's great.
Okay, so first of all, where are you going?
We are going to Namibia, which is in Southwest Africa. So right next to South Africa on the continent, all the way down and on the West Coast.
Do you know what you'll be doing there?
Yes, we will be English teachers. We did a little bit of English as second language at our church. And as it turns out in the Peace Corps, that's about all we're qualified to do. We're not educators, we're not farmers, we're not doctors, but we hope we can teach English pretty well. We will have about 10 weeks of intense training in Namibia in that, as well as a new language, which we don't know yet what language we're going to have. We don't know what city we're going to be in, or village, or hut. As the Peace Corps often says, stay flexible. And we are very flexible at this exact moment.
Can you take me back to the moment where you decided to apply for the Peace Corps?
Yes, and I do. This is one thing I really want people to know about, especially if you're over 50. My wife and I went to a program in KCK about 6-7 years ago, which said, hey, if you're over 50 and ever thought about joining the Peace Corps, come visit. And so we went to the meeting. We thought, oh, well, when we retire, that might be kind of fun to do. And it turns out that there is maybe about 10% of Peace Corps volunteers are over 50. We hope we both happen to be 62, so we're even a little bit older than that. But we also met a couple from Kansas City that's 70, and they're on their third Peace Corps trip to Moldova right now. So if you can do that, you get to the point where, okay, that would be different. Then we'll look at the process. And the process, I'm going to say, excruciating is way too hard, but it is excruciating at some points because you're dealing with government agency after all, but there are like 8 months worth of steps you take. So we did not realize at the beginning, but we do realize it now, and I think that's good.
You know, I'm not an expert in the Peace Corps, but it is my understanding that Peace Corps volunteers are encouraged to sort of tread lightly culturally as far as being outsiders in a certain environment and being, you know, respectful of how things are done in the place that you are doing your work. That's interesting to me, coming from your background as an editorial columnist,
yes,
where you absolutely do not tread lightly, mm-hmm, have not treaded lightly. That's part of that job description, is being unafraid of offending, ruffling feathers. That's going to be quite a switch.
Yes, it will. And you're absolutely correct. That is one of the things they say. You're representing the United States 24/7. In Namibia, actually, it's a country of about 2.5 million in a nation that's twice the size of California. So it's a population spread out. but they are generally, as teachers, you're generally expected to wear a tie, which I haven't done for about 40-some-odd years. You are expected to treat people with respect, but you also get respect back, which is actually, as one of the older Peace Corps volunteers, you're told you'll get a little bit more respect. But
do you think you're
going
to be able
correct.
To hold your tongue if you disagree with things, if you are opposed?
I do think so, and part of the reason is people say, oh, aren't you going to keep writing your blog? And I'm going, in the next 12 weeks, I'll be learning a new language, a new job, and a new culture, which is exactly what you're talking about, which is to be welcoming to other people because I want them to welcome me. I want them to help me learn the language. I want them to help me learn the job. And I do want to fit in. You know, I, even though I ruffled some feathers, obviously I fit in Kansas City because people still talk to me. but and over there, I want to fit in by probably behaving differently. Good point. But it's also like that's their culture. That is the culture that I'll be in.
You know, I want to kind of go back through some of your career because, I mean, talk to me about some of the times when you maybe ruffled feathers to the point that were you ever not sure that people were going to keep talking to you?
Well, when Emanuel Cleaver wanted me fired when he was mayor, that was a that was a tough one. And I think one of the big things in the most recent years, of course, were the dust-ups with Sam Brownback and then later Chris Kobach. And obviously, I was not the only person who was pointing out some of the stuff, but it did get me a lot of national attention. I started thinking, oh, wow, I mean, actually people, the LA Times and the Washington Post and New York Times were paying attention to what we were writing here in Kansas City, and that's because they had become national stories. And in a way, that's kind of nice to do. But then I was also, you know, later in the week, I'd be writing about a very local issue, which only people in, you know, maybe Independence, Missouri really cared about or whatever. So that kind of keeps you grounded. But I do think there's one of my thoughts always as editorial page writer for 32 years was, why do people keep talking to me? Because this time they think they might have the winning argument. And in case, sometimes it often happened that way. I mean, Emanuel Cleaver, his last 4 years, after he tried to fire me, had a great four-year term. And we were, I'm not going to say buddies, but we were much better friends at the end than we were in the beginning, as one example.
So people in Kansas City, even people who have disagreed with you, couldn't quite disengage.
I think that's true. And I think that's not just a Kansas City thing. I think I've talked to other editorial writers, even people who do like to ruffle feathers, and they say that, you know, politicians especially realize that, hey, you know, you disagree with them on this, but maybe you'll agree with them on that. And I do think they do want to have positive words in the paper, on the radio, whatever. So that is one reason they keep talking to you. Now, not everybody did that. I've been blocked on Twitter by Chris Kobach, for example. It's like, oh, come on. You know, I mean, I can find out what you're saying.
Do you think, though, that if you were to stay, I mean, do you think that you have to go to another continent in order for you to be able to disengage?
Boy, that is a great question because it's absolutely true. I'm just so, you know, I've been on the phone and Twitter and I've been on Facebook and I've known all these metrics and all that kind of stuff. And at some point it was kind of like, no. And as I said before, I've really done this for a long enough time. I'd really like to try something different, but if I just moved to another city or whatever, I'd probably still be on Twitter. And, oh, there's 10,000 people who want to, including bots. No, I really won't have time for it, at least in the first few months, I'm sure. And I do think that's absolutely correct. For my personality, I need to totally disengage and go somewhere else to do that.
Do you think that there is a time, I mean, you've talked about that city council will go on without you
yeah.
and without your commentary.
Yeah.
Do you think that there can you identify a time where you think something you wrote maybe did change the course of events in a significant way?
Well, I think, one of the things was Union Station, and that goes all the way back to 1996 when they were talking about, well, let's tear it down. And we editorially got behind saving it, and obviously some other groups did too. And then after that, they said, now we're going to take all this public money and spend it in private. And I was like, no, this is tax dollars. And that became a big brouhaha in the civic community with the Star about the only one. And I was writing saying, no, we have to have these discussions. The head of Sprint quit the board when the Hallmark people came in and said, well, I guess the Star is right. We got to do it this way. And that's like one thing where we fought for open government. And that's one of the things the Star's always done. And I was very I guess, very tough on, is that we have to have open government in Kansas City. And we've had times where we discover something's done in private, and more than likely it was not done correctly. Even the KCI negotiations most recently, where the city kind of had privately, Mayor James and the city manager, well, we'll just do it one way. And I think it's done better by having other people compete for that. So there are, I guess there are probably a lot of little things I can think of, but that's one example where you just have to have open government. And that's what I think the Star and other news organizations must fight for.
Do you think that the editorial page, I mean, do you think that being a voice on that page has shaped your relationship with the city beyond people in power, beyond the politics?
Absolutely. I was at Costco yesterday with my wife, where we're trying to find out what to do with our Costco membership. About 65 more things to do in the next week. And this lady said, oh, hi, I'm Kathleen. I watch you on Ruckus. I read your blog. I read you in the Star forever. And it's like, oh, okay, thank you very much. And she said, oh, you always made so much sense. I'm like, oh, okay, great. A fan, you know, not somebody who's upset. But that's actually one of the best things. I'd be in a Walmart or a grocery store. And I'm going to say, you know, normal everyday people who are engaged in reading or listening or watching stuff would say, oh, you made some sense when you talked about XYZ. And it could be almost anything, you know, salaries for police officers or something else. And yeah, that's an ego boost, but it's also like, wow, people, that's who you are running for, the engaged people, the people who are going to vote, the people who are going to try to make something, you know, better in the Kansas City area.
How do you think that you'll use that experience as you go to Namibia and begin teaching English?
Well, one thing is I'm hoping to be more outgoing with different people. Believe it or not, I'm actually reserved sometimes. And it takes
when you aren't behind a keyboard?
Yes, I think so. I think that's exactly what it is. And so I need to kind of have a push. My wife's less reserved, so she's out there glad-handing people and all that. And I think that's one thing I need to do more of, because I'm going to be talking to people who are different from myself and have different viewpoints of life. They get a different enjoyment out of life. Yes, they have a different economic standing, whatever. But you're also going to realize, yeah, but they're human beings and they're having a great time as well, or at least they're having a life that I need to see from a different point of view.
Do you mind my asking how old you are?
I'll be 62 next week.
So at 62, you're leaving a place that where you've done a very particular thing, filled a very particular role. You're part of this community and you're part of a profession. Mm-hmm. You're leaving to take on a new profession, live in a totally different culture, another continent, leave all of that behind at 62.
Right.
Is that at all intimidating to you?
It's actually sounded more intimidating about 8 months ago when we started this process. And the more you learn about what you'll be doing, the more forms you fill out, the more medical tests you do, the more I'm FBI background cleared, by the way, just to let everybody know.
That's
so
reassuring.
Yes, reassuring. So all the stuff you've done, now it's like, well, gosh darn, I got to do it now because I went through all this time and trouble and fun. It was a lot of fun talking to a lot of young people who are interviewing you for the job. But it was fun, I will say.
Do you think that you view what's ahead of you differently because of your age and your place in life than someone who's just out of college, for example?
Yes, I think that's one thing real quickly that's really good about older people doing the Peace Corps. We realize we're not going to change the world, but if we can change a small part of it, if we can do the best job we can in teaching English in Namibia, that will be enough.
Spoken like a true editorial page columnist.
Okay, I think so. We'll see if I can write from there at some point. But right now, it's going to be all hands on deck learning a new language.
Well, our time is up. Yael Abuhalka, good luck.
Thank you very much, Gina. Appreciate it.
You can listen back to both of today's conversations at kcur.org/centralstandard. That's kcur.org/centralstandard. And tomorrow, we're looking forward to exciting things to come on Kansas City's arts calendar. We'll hear from an artist in residence at the Nelson Atkins Museum and the director of a three-person staging of Macbeth. Macbeth is the name of that play, in case you were wondering what I was just trying to say. You can keep in touch with us anytime on Twitter. We're at KCURCST. This show is produced by Matthew Long Middleton, Sylvia Maria Gross, Jen Chen, Andrea Tudhope, and Suzanne Hogan, with lots of help from intern Danielle Hogarty. I'm Gina Kaufman, and Up to Date is next. Don't miss it.
Thank you.